Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_bball. We're getting to the end of these season preview podcasts. Today's show we're going to be covering the Portland Trailblazers. And to help me cover the Portland Trailblazers, I am joined by RotoWire and America's biggest cricket fan, Eric Katuri. Eric, how are you going?
Yeah, that may be true.
I'm certain. Well, I'm certain that it's true. Well, maybe America's biggest born in America cricket fan. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who live in America who weren't born there that are big cricket fans. But for someone born and bred in the States, I'd say you're right up there.
Yeah, you have to say that. I'm lucky to have like a few Indians help me get to know the game, though. You know,
I'm sure that everyone is fascinated by your love of cricket and this cricket discussion. But we're going to talk Portland Trailblazers, Eric. But before we do that, let's everyone know where they can A, find you on Twitter, and any sort of articles you've got coming out.
Oh yeah, so you can find me on Twitter @etcat30, and I guess we'll have a few articles coming up on RotoWire pretty soon, namely the sleepers article.
Yep. So make sure you're checking Eric out on Twitter and keeping an eye on RotoWire for all of Eric's stuff that is coming out. Now, Eric, you do cover the Trailblazers for RotoWire, so you've got a pretty in-depth knowledge of everything to do with this team, and they are one of the more fascinating teams this offseason. I don't think any person can say that they got better this offseason. They got dramatically worse. Not often a team loses four of their five starters from the previous season, and some bench depth as well. But I like what they did. They knew that they were losing players, but they said, you know what, let's blow it up. Let's bring guys in, younger players, and try and build with a younger core. What were your thoughts on what the team did? We know they got worse, but did you like the way that they got worse? That's a dumb question, but do you like what they did?
Oh man, I mean, I guess they drew a lot of lottery tickets, namely Mason Plumlee. Let's see what he can do. Al-Farouq Aminu, Gerald Henderson, and then on the low end, we have guys like Noah Vonleh and Mo Harkless. Mason Plumlee is probably the biggest addition, though. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to reel off these guys they brought in. Mike Miller, we can figure about him. Gerald Henderson, he's yuck. Al-Farouq Aminu, I like. Ed Davis, I like. Mo Harkless, I really like. Mason Plumlee, I would agree. He is the best addition, and he's going to probably be, for head-to-head leagues, probably the second-best fantasy guy on this team behind Damian Lillard. They brought in Phil Pressey as well. He's junk. And Noah Vonleh, he was pretty bad last season, but he did battle an injury. He was one of the youngest players in last year's draft. I wasn't a massive fan of him heading into the draft. There's still a lot of potential with him, but I'm not all that high on Vonleh. Let's talk Plumlee first, though. He was a guy that last season was starting ahead of Brook Lopez, misguidedly starting ahead of Brook Lopez. I didn't agree with it, but he was. He was putting up pretty decent numbers, and now he's in a situation where he's going to be pretty much unchallenged for the starter's position in Portland. Where do you see his role in Portland? What sort of minutes are we going to be looking at for Mason Plumlee? Is he going to be a 30-plus minute guy?
Well, so last year when he was starting in front of Brook Lopez, he was getting 27 minutes per game. I find it hard to believe he's actually going to be that low. His floor is probably going to be about probably 31, 32 minutes. That would be the area I would put it at, I guess. And I guess in that 27 minutes per game last year, he actually did fairly well. 12.4 points, 7.8 rebounds, a block and a steal. That block and steal is really helpful in specifically head-to-head leagues.
The block and steal is really good. You know what else he does? He's a huge field goal percentage guy. In his rookie season, he led the league in field goal percentage. I think shot 66%. He was at 57 last year. He's going to be great in those sort of areas. He's going to be decent points, big rebounds. The steal is going to be awesome. The blocks will be great. The field goal percentage will be great. But, Eric, the free throw percentage is going to be horrible. It's going to be that horrible that he is going to be, from my calculations and the projections over at Basketball Monster, he is going to be the fourth worst free throw percentage contributor. DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, Dwight Howard, Mason Plumlee. And when we talk standard scores, he's going to be at a -3, which is so far off the pace that if you're in a roto league, you can't deal with that. You can't draft him and expect to really recover from that number. It is massive. He necessitates a punt free throw build, and you need to bear that in mind when you're looking at drafting him. So I don't think I'm going to grab him in the last round of my team, because he's just going to just drop your field goal or your free throw percentage. He could in essence drop it 5%. with his, because he doesn't, it's not like he doesn't take many free throws. In 21 minutes a game last year, he attempted 4 free throws. That's a big amount. That projects out to about, I've got him projected at over 5 free throw attempts a game at 54%. That's not good. Now, the 54% that he's projected at this year is better than the 50 he shot last year, worse than the 63 he shot in his rookie season. Where does he sort of fit in the middle there? Well, that's where I've got him projected. Look, does he go back to his rookie season? If he does, then he's not a punt free throw guy, but I'm not risking that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that you don't really want to rely upon in roto leagues, you're right. I don't know. He hasn't really shown any improvement on that front, but I don't know. You can probably get to maybe 55%, but that's still not anything that you really, you know, desire over, you know?
And it's big volume as well. It's not talking he's shooting 50% on 1.3 shots like Rajon Rondo. We're talking that he could be a guy that gets 5 shots a game from the free throw line, and that it hurts you a lot, especially if teams then start going with the hacker strategy. It's going to, you know, bump it up even further, and that's going to become a real, real issue. But I think for head-to-head leagues, he's going to be a steal if you're punting free throws. He's going to return top 50 value in that sort of build. But you have to be aware that if you're not punting it, then you avoid him. But you know, if you grab a DeAndre Jordan and maybe you miss Andre Drummond early on to really solidify your rebounds, you can go and grab Mason Plumlee later on in a build where you're punting free throws, and you can get yourself 8 rebounds, big field goal percentage, nice blocks, nice steals, and get him really late. Because his average draft position is 138. And I think that that's way too low for head-to-head leagues. Do you think that's way too low for him?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He has to be approaching that top 100 stage at this point, correct?
Yep, almost guaranteed. I can't see a situation where he doesn't. There's no one who's going to take those minutes away from him. Now, the other guys that came across, there's a few guys we do need to touch on here. Ed Davis, he's probably going to be the primary backup big man, so pay big backup minutes at the 4, backup minutes at the 5. I've got him projected at about 24 minutes, which is similar to what he played in Los Angeles last season, and he is useful in that role. He sort of does a Mason Plumlee type role. He can get blocks, he gets big rebound numbers, good field goal percentage, a bad free throw percentage. You're going to be able to get those numbers in limited minutes. And if for some reason he does get starters minutes, which we saw him do about 2 or 3 seasons ago in Toronto, he was a very useful fantasy player. So he's a guy that if something changes in this front court, and by no means is the front court rotation set in Portland, we don't exactly know what's going to happen. Ed Davis is going to be a player who I think is going to have significant value. Look, he's probably going to have standard league value even in a bench role, back end of the standard of a standard league, last round, last roster spot, but he will have that value. And if he becomes a starter and plays 30 minutes, he jumps up. What's your take on Davis? He's a guy that I think has been misused a lot in his career.
Yeah, and the main problem I see with him is I don't see him actually coexisting very well with Mason Plumlee, and that's the reason I don't think he's actually going to be a starter. Yep. I think that's going to be Mason Plumlee, or sorry, Myers Leonard taking that spot in place of LaMarcus, who, you know, left this summer. So, yeah, Davis and Plumlee can't coexist. They're going to clog up the lane for guys like Lillard and CJ McCollum. So, yeah, that's why he's going to come off the bench. And that 24 minutes that you mentioned, I think is actually maybe a little generous. I think that you have to scale that back maybe a little bit, just because he can't be on the court at the same time with Plumlee.
Well, look, that is positive. Look, I think he'll play some minutes with Plumlee, but in essence, he is the backup. He is the backup center. So, yeah, Plumlee might play 30, 32 minutes. You're going to get 16 minutes or so, 16 to 18 minutes there out of Davis. And maybe they play 4 or 5 minutes together. That's how I got it to the 24. But look, that could change.
I also think the Blazers are actually going to try all small ball lineups with Myers Leonard at center. Yep. And perhaps for El Farouk Aminu at power. And then, Gerald Henderson, CJ, and Dame Lillard, you know, as the wings.
Definitely. And I think there's Noah Vonleh they can throw in there as well.
Yeah, indeed.
So they do have lots of options, but El Farouk Aminu is going to play a lot of 4. I'm convinced he's probably going to be the starting 3. Let's talk about him now, because he's going to be the starting 3. He was probably the first contract that was signed in the offseason as a free agent. It got a lot of eyebrows raising. Did you think it was a massive overpay, or are you okay with it?
Oh no, with how salaries are going to inflate, with the new CBA that's coming up, and even before that. You know, we're projecting about $89 million for the salary cap in the 16-17 season. So his 3-year, $20 million contract is really, affordable in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's an underrated player because, you know, a lot of players get underrated because they don't score. He doesn't score, but he does a lot of the hard and dirty work. Lots of rebounds, lots of great defensive things. Look, he's a guy who can who can go out there and it would obviously be a miraculous performance, but he could have 18 rebounds, he could have 3 steals and 3 blocks, and that could all happen for him in one game. And it wouldn't be insane if someone like Chris Kaman went out and did that. You'd go, what's going on? But if Al-Farouq Aminu went out there with those massive rebounds and big steals and big blocks, that's just what he can do. He can hit a 3, albeit at a pretty shitty percentage, but he can give you a half a 3 to a 3 a game. Big rebound numbers for a guy who's going to be small forward eligible, steals and blocks, and that's where his value is going to be. So he's going to have standard league value as well. So many of these players that are brought in are going to have standard league value, but most of it is going to be outside the top 100, probably with the exception of Mason Plumlee, as we touched on before.
Right.
What about Noah Vonleh? What are your thoughts? I gave you my thoughts on him before. I'm not a big fan. Is there any chance he gets a significant role on this team?
When it comes to, you know, Noah Vonleh and Mo Harkless, I think those guys are more so projects than they are, you know, actually going to hold legitimate value this year. You're going to be considering them in dynasty formats and then maybe, you know, putting them on the watch list in case some injuries happen in the front court and, you know, they're able to fill in there and actually show what they're worth and show kind of the value they'll have in the future. But I don't really see them having anything close to standard league value.
Vonleh disappointed a lot last season, said I'm not a big fan of him. Mo Harkless is a guy that I am a big fan of, so I think that he's going to get a pretty decent opportunity to get some minutes. I think that he plays in excess of 20 minutes this season. I think he gets in excess of 20 minutes this season. I was just trying to work out where I had him, because I do like what he can do. He is a really good defender. He does need to improve his shooting, which dropped off significantly, but he was in a bad situation for himself in Orlando. He was basically just shut out of the rotation. There was obviously internal issues there because it wasn't an injury. He just was not playing, and there was no real reason for him not to play, even when they had, you know, big openings on the wing. They were putting Devin Marble in ahead of him, and let's be honest, Devin Marble, yeah, Mo Harkless may not be a great player, but he's a better player than Devin Marble. So he really struggled.
They were even playing veterans like Willie Green and Ben Gordon over
him. Exactly. You know? There was something internally going on, and I did hear that there was a personality issue that was causing that problem, not necessarily a playing issue. So he came to Portland. He's been advised by Portland he's going to get a big chance at getting a starting job. He probably won't get that, but that means he's going to be in that primary wing backup role. He's going to get you good steal numbers. He could approach a steal to a steal and a half a game. He can sort of hit a 3. He's going to need to improve a lot. There's no doubt about that. And he's not someone I'm advocating to be drafted in standard leagues, but he's someone that I do want to have a look at if he gets into a role where there is 25 minutes, 14, 16 team leagues will want to pay attention. Do you think he's a better player than, say, Alan Crabb, who's on this roster?
Oh, man. Like, Crabb has found difficulty already getting minutes in this system, and even in the playoffs, yeah, I think he got a start because of injuries, you know, obviously to Wes Matthews and even Aaron Aflalo, and those were pretty horrid showing. So I'm not really encouraged by, you know, what he can potentially do.
He started a few games last season when Nick Batum was out as well, and he was just out there putting up zeros. That's basically what he was able to excel at. I don't have a huge amount. You know, JJ Kelly, who was on the podcast last week, is a big fan of Alan Crabb. Not really sure why he is, but he seems to be in Alan Crabb's camp. I'm firmly in the Mo Harkless camp for that backup. Those backup wing minutes.
When it did come to Crabb starting for Nicholas Batum, the like 8 or so times he did it, I think it was 7-1. But he was playing with veterans, you know, that doesn't really translate to fantasy value. But I mean, for the team's success, it did work out.
What about Gerald Henderson? He's a guy, a veteran, came across from Charlotte. He had actually, you know, especially down the stretch, an underrated sort of season. He put together some pretty nice numbers. And for me to say that Gerald Henderson put together nice numbers, it means he must have done something right, because I'm not a fan of what he does. He doesn't hit threes. He only averaged 0.6 threes as a shooting guard, but his assist numbers were up there. His percentages are pretty solid, 85% from the line, 44% from the field, some okay scoring, nothing too spectacular, but he could put himself into a bigger not role, more shouldering more responsibility, because he played 29 minutes a game last year in Charlotte and didn't do a huge amount. Do you see anything from Gerald Henderson, or are you leaving him well alone on in standard leagues?
You know, I'm probably leaving him well alone, but I mean, he's a solid veteran presence that will probably do exactly what he did in Charlotte in Portland this season. I don't really see his, you know, stats changing, his role changing.
That's fair enough. Do you think he starts?
I do think he starts, actually. I think it'd be better for CJ McCollum to, you know, he'll be getting an obviously huge bump in his workload, but be better for him to maybe come off the bench when he's facing, you know, other opposing bench players and, you know, learn how to prosper from that standpoint.
I agree with that completely. I think that he is going to start and McCollum will be the sixth man. Now, the guys that they lost in the offseason, we know Steve Blake left, Aaron Aflalo left, which is probably addition by subtraction. Nick Batum went, Robin Lopez went, Wes Matthews left, and the big one, Alonzo G, left as well. And LaMarcus Aldridge. I forgot about him. LaMarcus Aldridge also left. So Alonzo G is huge. Massive loss for the Blazers. But that's a big, big chunk of players. And that's why there's so many spots to fill, and there's so much uncertainty with what's going to happen with this team. And there's, you know, four or five guys that you could take outside the top 100 who could end up having, could have top 100 value, but at this point we just don't really know about it. What I want to focus on now, Eric, though, is some of the young players on this team. Vonleh is the highest draft choice out of the last two seasons. He wasn't picked by this team. Obviously, he came across in the Batum deal. We've touched a little bit on him. The other guys on this team, Pat Connaughton, a second-round draft choice. Tell us what you know about Pat Connaughton.
Well, okay, so in his last 2 years at Notre Dame, he hit 2.4 three-pointers per game. So we know he's a decent spot-up shooter. And another stat in that regard is he actually led the NCAA last year with 1.25 three-points per possession on spot-up sets. So he's actually a good spot-up shooter, and that's going to be key for him to actually, like work out a role with the Blazers this season. I think they're going to need that with all the losses, you know, Nicholas Batum, Wesley Matthews, like there's a lot of volume out there and he could potentially get into that act.
And the thing with him is you mentioned he's going to be a good shooter. I think he projects as a pretty nice three-point shooter. He's a crazy athlete, like superb athlete, played. He had to decide whether he was going to play baseball or basketball. He's gone the basketball route. He is a crazy like athlete in that sense, but he's a crazy athlete in terms of his jumping ability, his dunking ability. And when you look at him, he doesn't strike you as that sort of guy at all. He looks as bad as athletic as me. But he gets out there and he can get up and he can throw it down. The other thing is their wing guys, they can't shoot. Like Gerald Henderson can't shoot from deep. Al-Farouq Aminu, forget about it. Mo Harkless, no, they can't shoot. So if they're going to want to stretch the floor and they're going to, we need a wing who can shoot, Connaughton's going to have to get out there because they're, look, CJ McCollum, but he's too small to play the three. I'm talking about Henderson, Aminu, and Harkless, the guys who can play the three, they can't shoot. Crabb, not really either. I think Connaughton's going to be the best long-range shooter on this team in that wing position, and that could force him into a bigger role than what a lot of people may be expecting. There's no way I'm taking him anywhere in standard league drafts, but deeper leagues, and he's going to be a name you want to pay attention to because we've seen second-round draft choices, you know, come out of the blocks fast. Remember Chandler Parsons in his rookie season? He started off and goes, who's this guy? Who's Chandler Parsons? And he solidified himself in a decent role as an athletic wing guy who hits threes, and Connaughton, he strikes me a little bit as a Chandler Parsons type of player. So I think there's a little bit to be excited about with him. What about Cliff Alexander? Oh,
yeah. Cliff Alexander, man. The Kansas experiment didn't work very well, eh? And then he came out early, did get drafted. So, you know, not much worked out for him in the last year, despite his being a top five, high school player as a senior. He only has a non-guaranteed deal right now, too. So, you know, he has basically the next month to prove that he deserves a roster spot and, you know, 7 games within that to actually, you know, solidify something. So, I don't know. It's going to be very difficult for him to actually be on this final roster, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, obviously there's a lot of talent there. We saw that him coming out of high school into college. Yeah, teams clamoring to get his signature. He struggled. There's no solidified starters in this team, so maybe he could eke out a role, but I just don't think so. There seems to be too many guys ahead of him on this team. Another guy who was drafted in the second round this year, he's not coming over, but for deep dynasty guys, they might want to know about Daniel Diaz. And I don't know if you know anything about Daniel Diaz. Eric, do you know anything about him?
I actually know very little about him. I all I remember from the draft is I had to, I believe, write a note about him and then, you know, say he's going to be stashed in Europe the next few years.
Yep. Now, yeah, he's Spanish, I think the main reason I wanted to bring up Daniel Diaz is because I'm looking on his NBADraft.net player profile, and his NBA comparison is Luke Harangotti. And I think I think when you're using the term NBA and Luke Harangotti in the same phrase, not a huge amount of expectation for Daniel Diaz. I just wanted to get that one out there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not really an NBA comparison because how many games did Harangotti play? About 12.
Yeah. Oh man, like he was shipped back and forth between the Cavs and the Canton Charge, you know, for an entire year, and then we didn't really hear from him again. So
he played in Summer League, I think.
Yeah, in Summer League, of course. But you know, I'm talking about the league itself.
Oh no, but I think this year he played on a team. Like he was not on a roster, but he played for someone in Summer League this season.
Oh, I know you saw a heck of a lot more Summer League than I did.
I'm sure I saw him there playing. I don't remember who he played for, but I'm sure I saw him playing for someone. What about what about breakout candidates, Eric?
We definitely had some Summer League on in the office, and I do believe we were like, is that really the Luke Harangotti playing Summer League right now?
Yeah. He definitely played. I'm 100% sure he played. Don't know who it was. He didn't get signed to anyone, but he was definitely out there. So shout out to Luke Harangotti if he's listening.
Right on.
Breakout candidates, Eric, who's a guy, and there's a lot of candidates on this team. If you were to pick out one guy who's going to go from being an irrelevant player to a decent player or a good player to a great player or whatever to something, who's going to be a guy who really sticks out as being a career year sort of guy? Who's the guy on this team that if you had to put your money on one guy, this is the guy that I'm putting it on?
I think this guy will have a career year to this point, and it'll probably extend to the next few years of his career, CJ McCollum, actually. So after Wesley Matthews tore his Achilles last year, McCollum averaged 11 points, a three, and a steal in 22 minutes over the last 21 games. And then in the playoffs against Memphis, he actually had at least 18 points and multiple trays in each of the last three playoff games. So that's just like a sign of things to come, I think. You can probably expect a decent amount of scoring off the bench. Maybe 1 to 2 threes per game, a steal. But, you know, that's the guy I'm thinking of. And he's really a guy that you consider for maybe the back end of, like, standard league 12-team drafts or, you know, deeper formats.
He's exactly the same guy that I had down as my breakout player. Some people are extremely high on him for this season. I am not in that category. He's currently being drafted at pick 130. I think that's about right. I'd be okay taking him a round or two ahead of that. But inside the top 100 is pushing it a little bit for me. Not too much, but I think that it's pushing it a little bit. And his breakout playoff performance, he outplayed Aaron Aflalo, who started ahead of him. He played 33 minutes of games in the playoffs, 17 points, and that's great. 2.2 threes, but that was on 48% shooting from deep. I think it's unrealistic to think he's going to do that. He's not. It's going to be impossible. He's not going to shoot that. He shot 48% from the field. Again, he's not going to do that. But just, I don't know if you've got the stats in front of you. He's a guy who's going to be the sixth man and play point guard and shooting guard. How many assists do you reckon he averaged per game in the playoffs?
How many assists? I don't have that currently in front of me.
I've got it. I just want you to take a guess. How many assists per game you reckon he might have accumulated as a backup point guard and shooting guard ball handler?
You know what, I'm going to guess total over 5 games, so 4?
2.
2.
So he averaged 0.4 assists over his 5 playoff games. Now, that's not indicative necessarily, much like his great shooting is not going to carry over. That poor assist rate might not carry over. But during the season, his per 36 assist numbers were 2.4. Like, that's not good for a guy who's going to be relied upon to be a backup point guard. Now, maybe he plays more backup point this year, and he has had... and he's been injured a lot, which is another concern with CJ McCollum, but he's not going to, he'll score. I think he'll score a lot more than what we've seen from him. He'll shoot threes, but he's not a big rebounder. The assists are going to be low. He's going to be a pretty decent steal sort of player, but he's not going to be contributing in enough categories where I'm going to need to go. You know, some people are looking at him maybe inside the top 60, and that to me feels a little bit crazy. I could be very, very wrong on that, but I just don't think he's doing enough across the board to make me want to go that high on him. And look, even if he finishes in the top 60, if you grab him at 60, you're grabbing him at his ceiling, and there's no value in grabbing someone that high. I'd rather get someone else at pick 100 and maybe they get to pick 70, because you're actually gaining value from where you pick them. And I just don't know if CJ McCollum has got that much upside in him. I think he's got tremendous upside. I think he's going to be a breakout player, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that you need to go after that hard because, again, these numbers are pretty low. Those assist numbers are pretty low, and he's an injury-prone player. He's missed big chunks of his first two seasons. He's had a broken foot in there as well, hand problems. We've yet to see him play a significant season. 38 games his rookie year, 62 last season. Is he injury-prone? Maybe, maybe not. They're all concerns to me, but even saying that, I still had him as my breakout player because he's going to be much, much improved. And considering what we saw in the second half, he was good, but we need to temper our expectations a lot, I think, with him.
Yeah, and, you know, with all the hype around him from, you know, the rest of the fantasy community or certain members of them at least, you know, we would have that. We would also hold that same opinion, I probably, if, you know, Gerald Henderson wasn't there. But the fact that he's going to be coming off the bench, you know, doesn't make me feel that comfortable taking him, like you said, top 100 at all.
Yeah, no, that's look, I'm okay around 100, but any higher than that, I think that you're pushing his ceiling, which is not a great way to be trying to get value in drafts, in my opinion. What about sleeper players, Eric? Who's a sleeper to you?
Well, I actually have down maybe a guy you don't. I have Myers Leonard. How about you?
I had Mason Plumlee, which we've touched on him already, but I want to hear your spiel on Leonard because I'm a huge Leonard fan.
Yeah, so we kind of already mentioned his you know, viability with different types of lineups. Like if he starts at power next to Plumlee, which we think will happen, you know, that's all great. But there's a potential for small ball lineups too, you know, with Damian, CJ, Gerald, Amino, and potentially Myers out there. But maybe Myers spelling Plumlee off the bench. And then you can serve at both the four and five, you know, mix in whoever may be having foul trouble on a given night or whoever has it on a given night. So, yeah, like that's I guess why he's my breakout.
I think that at pick 142 where he's currently being drafted, you can get 40 spots value on him no matter what format, roto or head-to-head. I think that we know he's going to be efficient. He was probably he was the NBA's best shooter last season in all areas. He was a 50, 40, 90 guy. He exceeded those marks, 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from the free throw line. He's going to get a bigger role this season. He's not the best defender, but he can stretch the floor. He can hit threes. His per 36 numbers are impressive, 14 and 10.5 with two threes a game. Only half a block, but the percentages are fantastic. And you know that they're going to be solid. He's a really good shooter. And like CJ McCollum, in the playoffs, he started to put up some big numbers. He outplayed Aaron Aflalo. Myers Leonard was coming off the bench, but in essence, he was starting next to LaMarcus Aldridge in terms of the minutes that he was getting. Robin Lopez was starting, and then he was sitting his ass down for majority of the game as Leonard went out there and played big minutes. I'm just going to bring up his playoff stats as we talk. Where are we? He played 21 minutes a game, and Lopez was lower than that. He averaged 8 points in that time. He averaged 6.6 rebounds, half a block, half a steal. Now, I talked about CJ McCollum's three-point percentage being unsustainable from the playoffs. Myers Leonard shot 77% from three in the playoffs. On 2.6 attempts per game, though.
Yeah.
It's not sustainable, but that's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, he does have heat check moments, and the entire series, you know, was a heat check moment for him there.
It was something to watch, and you'd have to think that he's going to start. Everything coming out of Portland says that he is going to be the starter there next to Mason Plumlee. And I think that's significant value. At pick 142, I think that he returns, you know, three, four rounds, maybe extra value on top of that, especially if you are really valuing efficiency and if you're in a roto league late, and he's not going to hurt you in either one of those categories and then gives you the extra three, some nice rebounds, some decent points. I think he's going to be a really good player. Plumlee, as I mentioned early, he's got top 50 head-to-head potential with the big field goal percentage, big rebounds, blocks, steals, and points. I think that's significant value in a head-to-head league. But remember about the free throw percentage. So there are a couple of guys that are sleepers on this team. What about someone who's overvalued? It's hard for these guys to be overvalued, but there's a guy that I think is getting drafted when he shouldn't. Is there anyone who you think is getting overvalued or over over-evaluated at this point?
Well, when we let's go back to Leonard for one second. Yep. What kind of minutes projection do you have?
I'll get him at 27.
Okay, so I think that's about right because in his career, he's actually averaging 5.3 fouls per 36 minutes. So that's really put a damper on his playing time if he doesn't actually cut that down. Maybe as he gets more respect in the league, though, we'll actually see that improve and he won't be so foul prone.
That's another thing. I think, you know what, something people don't realize about Myers Leonard is he was a lottery pick. People don't realize, CJ McCollum was a lottery pick as well. People don't necessarily realize that about them. They were relatively high draft choices. The other thing about Leonard is he is playing for a contract. He is in the last year of his rookie deal. He's going to be a restricted free agent. And that's when so many guys take big, big leaps in what they're able to do. Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green last season, huge, huge jumps. And Leonard is in that, you know, that sweet spot of he's ready to go. He's ready to put up some big numbers. And the situation's opening up for him. Everything is pointing to him having a really big season. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I've grabbed him in a couple of leagues. Or I think I grabbed him in our real salary dynasty league, Eric, that you're in with me. I grabbed Myers Leonard in that league. And you were pretty keen to try and get him off me.
Yeah, I definitely sent a message, but didn't follow up with any trade offers, you know.
Yes, but I'm keeping that in mind that you are a big fan of Myers Leonard, and I'm happy I grabbed him in that league at that salary. Next year might be a different story when he starts getting paid $10 million a year.
That's why I have Chris Stapps for the future.
Yeah, Chris Stapps is going to be a nice pick as well. All right, let's talk. Who's overvalued? Who's getting drafted too high?
Well, where do you have Ed Davis?
He's got his ADP at 119.
Yeah, I think that's actually too high because I don't think he's going to be able to, like I said earlier, coexist with Mason Plumlee. And we know Mason Plumlee is going to be trotted out there at least 32 minutes per game. So he'll have to spell him at the five. And then there are, you know, other guys that are competing for action at the four in Al-Farouq Aminu, maybe Noah Vonleh. So at that point, I'm not very encouraged that he can get a heck of a lot of minutes. Does that make sense?
Yep. No, I understand what you're concerned about the fit with the existing players there, and I can see that because he's a big guy. He's a close to the basket. He's not a shooter. He's going to be a pick and roll, an alley-oop sort of guy, much like Mason Plumlee is, and it's going to be hard, especially when their wings don't shoot very much, when Aminu's out there, Gerald Henderson's out there, and they can't shoot, and then you're pairing it with two front court guys who don't shoot. It's going to be all Damian Lillard all the time in that sort of scenario, and it's not necessarily going to be the greatest way for them to really start to build or develop their team.
Though, at least he's a really good rebounder. He's averaged 10.5 per 36 in his career.
No, he's a really good rebounder, and he's a really good shot blocker as well. And they're his two strengths. He struggles in some other areas, but his defense, his shot blocking, his rebounding is very good. The guy I had as an overvalued bust is Gerald Henderson, who's been picked at 150. And I know 150 is the last six picks of the draft. You're right at the end, but still, he's going to struggle to approach top 200 value in my opinion. He just doesn't do a huge amount. He's sort of solid for stretches, but overall, I think he gets less minutes in Portland than what he did in Charlotte. I hope he does. I hope the more minutes go to McCollum. Yeah, I hope that Pat Connaughton gets minutes in preference to him. I hope Mo Harkless gets minutes in preference to him. I just don't like Gerald Henderson much as a player at all. He's going to have probably an inexplicable share of top 10 highlight plays for the season when he just gets up and gets in people's faces with dunks. That's all he can really do. He can get in there and throw down dunks. And you go, geez, who's that bald guy? And you go, Gerald Henderson? Wow, didn't expect that. But that's all he does. That's all he can really do. So don't be too swayed by the highlight plays you see on ESPN or something like that. So
Henderson's also another guy who's in the last year of his contract. So yes. I mean, he does have something to play for, but you know, he has also played on a team that's had, you know, pretty much a lot of roster upheaval on a yearly basis. So he's kind of used to being in a, you know, rebuilding situation. So maybe that will help in his on his behalf. Who knows?
Yeah, look, there's so many unknowns on this team. We don't know what's going to happen with the wings. We don't know what's going to happen with the big men. You know, we could be talking all this stuff and they could go out there and run, you know, Henderson at the 2, Alan Crabb at the 3, Noah Vonleh at the 4, and Ed Davis at the 5, and then we're just going to look like idiots when the time comes for the season to start. I don't think that's going to be the case. Not that, you know, in terms of me looking like an idiot, because I'm sure that happens all the time, but I just don't see that running out as a starting lineup. But it's something that they could do. What about a player who is limited by their playing time? So if they're in a situation where they're going to get big minutes, then they become fantasy relevant. Who's the guy on this team that, you know, if someone gets injured ahead of them or a trade happens and they're pushed into a 30-plus minute role, that you would be running to the waiver wire to look at?
Well, I mean, I saw your description for this perfect situation, and it was more real life value than, you know, maybe fantasy value. And it's actually Myers Leonard. If he was, say, on Golden State and he could go out there and spell, you know, I don't know, Harrison Barnes, and they just let him sit out there and, you know, shoot threes all day, like that would be his maybe ideal situation.
I can see that. He on a good team as a big man sniper. There's not many guys on this team though who I look at and go, yeah, they're going to excel in big minutes. Mo Harkless, maybe Ed Davis. We've touched on him. If he's into a big role, if something happened to Mason Plumlee, you'd want to look at him. I think Pat Connaughton would be a guy that, if for some reason he's pushed into 30 minutes a night, I think that he's got a fantasy friendly game. The rebounds would be there, the 3-pointers would be there, the efficiency would be there. He'd score okay. I think he'd be the guy that, if for some reason, it's going to be hard to see it happening, but if injuries strike them down and Henderson goes down and Crabb goes down and Harkless goes down, or they all start struggling and Connaughton's in there at 30 minutes a night, then he's going to have fantasy value. Now, Gerald Henderson, if he plays 30 minutes a night, he struggles to have standard league value. So it's not that everyone who gets 30 minutes becomes a must-own guy. But I think Connaughton's a guy that could potentially be that sort of player who can contribute in numerous categories. It's definitely just a name to keep in the back of your mind or to chuck on a watch list. But he's not someone to completely forget about at this point. All right.
Yeah, I mean, we yeah, it's, you're right. Like, an upheaval. I'm almost speechless, like, thinking about Pat Connaughton playing 30 minutes a game on this team. It's going to be really difficult for it to happen, but you never know. You're right.
Look, Zach LaVine played 44 minutes a game down the stretch last season, and when he was drafted, I thought he'd struggle to see the court at all, because this guy's going to struggle in this season. But he ended up with 44 minutes a night. Things happen. Guys get injured. Guys get traded. Things go awry. And this is in terms of perfect situations, Portland's a perfect situation for things to go wrong, just with everything that sort of, all the new players that are there. We don't know how it's all going to mesh. Things could get ugly really quickly. Now, we've spoken about all the uncertainty. Go.
I was just going to say, if they're sitting at the bottom of the Western Conference, you know, at the All-Star break, you know, the trade deadline is a few days later, I can totally see them maybe just, you know, selling, you know, Gerald Henderson and, you know, a few other guys on the team. And then all of a sudden, you're right, then he does have a 20-plus minute role, because they want to see what they have in the young players at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And the reason I bring his name up is not so that you go, oh, I need to make sure I get him in the last pick of my draft or anything like that. Just so you know the name, just so you're aware of the name. And then in February, when they go Pat Connaughton starting, they go, you know what? Josh mentioned his name back in whatever month this is, September. Maybe I should have a look and make a speculative ad or whatever it is, because that's what you need to do. Just have an idea of who these guys are and what they can do if they're given the time. We've spoken about Pat Connaughton, we've spoken about Mo Harkless, we've spoken about Gerald Henderson and his ugly game. We haven't spoken about the only decent NBA player on this team, and that's Damian Lillard. What's your take on Lillard? Okay, so we know what he's been able to do. There's two schools of thought. He is going to be the man on this team. His numbers are going to improve because he is the only player left on this team. There's that school of thought. Or there's a school of thought is he's going to have to do everything. Who's he going to get the assist from? Who's he going to pass it to that's going to knock down shots? He's going to get, you know, worse field goal percentage, more pressure, more double teams, triple teams. He's not an elite guy at assists or steals. He's probably going to regress a little bit in terms of his overall fantasy value, even if he scores more. Which side of the fence are you on?
I'm on the positive side of the fence, actually. Okay. He's going to be one of the elite scorers in the NBA. I think his assists can sustain. You know, you're right. Like, he doesn't have the, you know, established talent next to him, but there's always assists to go around in the NBA. And I think he can, you know, sustain that 6.1 mark in his career. And, you know, he still gets a steal per game. He should get at least 2.5 3-pointers a game. So, I mean, there's a lot of positive aspects to this too. And he's actually built up to 4.6 rebounds per game. And that could, you know, that, let's see. Depending on who's on the court at the time, like, he may be able to sustain that. It really depends. But, you know, he averaged 4.6 rebounds per game last year, which is pretty impressive for a point guard.
Yeah, look, that's a fantastic number. And he got those assists back up over 6. And what was key about him last season is he actually got his steals over 1. The last two seasons he'd been below 1, which was, it's subpar for a point guard and for a top-level point guard, and it's what had always held him back. But he got the steals over 1, the assist back over 6. He's actually improved his field goal percentage last season. I think that's going to take a hit. I think we're going to see a big drop there, oh, yeah. And he's going to be a big punt field goal percentage sort of guy. We're talking a guy in the realm of the impact he has on a team will be Ricky Rubio-esque, Kemba Walker-esque, that sort of area, one that you have to really build around or you have to negate that category. But his free throw percentage is high. He's going to score well. Big 3-pointers, decent assists, break even steals. The big question with Damian Lillard, is he inside your top 10?
He's right there. He's right on the edge. I would say I would draft him at the end of, you know, standard 12 team leagues.
I've got him at 10. His ADP is 11. But for roto leagues, I'm not drafting him that high because I don't want to have to deal with such a bad field goal percentage. And the way that it's projected out at the moment, it's going to be tough. And it's going to be one of those situations where it's not quite a DeAndre Jordan free throw percentage, but it's going to be one of those ones where if you have him on your team, you're going to have to get high field goal percentage, high volume guys for the next 2 to 3 picks to bring it back to average. And that might be hard to do. So in roto, his value comes down.
Where do you have the field goal percentage falling to right now?
41.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's at like almost 19 attempts a game as well. So it's a drop of percentage plus it's an increase in attempts, and those two things are not conducive to rotisserie leagues anyway, when he's going to be shooting more and shooting worse because he's likely going to be taking worse shots, have more attention on him. It's going to make it harder. Look, he could prove me wrong, definitely, but in a roto league, I'm probably going to be passing on him. In a head-to-head league, if I've got those last couple of picks in the first round, anywhere between 9 and 12, I'm all okay with taking him. The other question there is, Damian Lillard or John Wall?
Yeah, you got to love the weapons around John Wall, so I go with Wall.
Okay, that's fair enough. I think I've got them, where have I got them? I've got them basically back-to-back. I've got Lillard at 10 and Wall at 11. So it's sort of pick your poison. Do you want points or do you want assists? You know, Wall's going to get you more assists and more steals. Lillard's going to get you more threes and more points. It just really depends on, the way that you want to build your team. And, yeah, I could have one at 10 and one at 11. It doesn't really make too much of a difference. It's just how do you want to build it? How do you want to do your team? Because they're going to give you similar value in completely different categories. Who else do we need to talk about on this team, Eric? We've covered most of the, I'm going to say big names, but that's probably a stretch for this team. There's only, Lillard's the only real big name player here. I don't think there's many other, Tim Frazier, Phil Pressey, who gets the third point guard role? Or is there a chance that they get a primary backup role and CJ McCollum plays exclusively at the two? I don't think Eric can hear me. No, Eric's dropped out. Well, I'm going to answer that question for you. No, they're not going to take primary roles on this team. I think Frazier will be the guy that's ahead of Pressey. We saw Frazier last season in Philadelphia. When he got starts, he was able to put up big assist numbers, but he's not a really great NBA player. He's a guy who can dish assists and can do that at a pretty high rate. And he's going to make a decent third point guard, but I don't think he's going to have much of an impact on this team for next season at all. Now, before we get into the next section, which is the our favorite players in this team, I'm going to wait for Eric to rejoin me. So we'll do that now. If you're watching live, just hang on a second so we can get Eric back on the show. Eric is back now. So let's get this started again. Apologies to everybody who are watching live as the Australia's fantastically rated internet service dropped out for the last couple of minutes. We're back in business now, Eric, and we're back in business to finish off the show. And what we've been doing on these shows is talking about our favorite players on the team. So I want to know who's your favorite player on this current team. I agree with that. He's definitely my number one guy as well. We've covered him pretty in depth. The most important question though, Eric, is who's your favorite all-time player on this team?
Oh, most definitely Rasheed Wallace. Ball don't lie, man.
That's, you know what, I put this question out on Twitter every time when I do this, and people always tweet me some great names. Buck Williams came up today as a name people thought might be my favorite player, but Rasheed came up as well. He was a great 3-point shooting big man. He was a triple one guy. He got a 3, a steal, and a block per game in multiple seasons. We know how I don't know the right word. Aggressive the right word? I don't know how best to describe him, but he was a fantasy force. He was an NBA force. And he was fun to watch with all his, even with his, you know, negative sort of antics and things like that. He was a fun guy to watch on this team, and no doubt.
Yeah, and he always brought that swagger too, and like every team like exhibited, you know, his, you know, persona basically. Like he was the heart and soul of every team he was on, and he, you know, won that championship with Detroit in 2004. So, you know, it all came to fruition in 1 year at least for him.
Now, everybody, again, we're tweeting out their thoughts on who my favorite player was going to be. Bill Walton was one of those. I'm shocked no one said Brandon Roy because he was close. We know that he was disappointed, or we were disappointed with losing him and his career with due to the knee injuries. But he's not the player that I'm going with. Clyde Drexler was another option. Kevin Duckworth was another name thrown out there. Obviously, Clyde Drexler was fantastic, and he was right up there in my favorite Blazers of all time. But my favorite Blazer of all time is Uncle Cliffy. Cliff Robinson, one of the first stretch big men in the NBA. He had a season back in 95-96 where he averaged 21 points a game as a center and hit 2.3 triples a game. That was pretty much unheard of back in those days. He had 3 straight 20-point seasons. Not a big rebounder. Never got over 7 rebounds a game as a center, which is not great. Never got over 2 blocks a game, but did have a season over 1.54 steals, 1.4 blocks. Very, very often got those over 1 steal, over 1 block a game. Solid free throws, solid field goal percentage. But where he excelled was being a stretch big man. And I love the headband. Not many guys back then were rocking headbands. It was very iconic for Cliff Robinson. The nickname was fantastic. Plus, he was on Survivor as well. And I think an underreported fact with Cliff Robinson is when Dennis Rodman headed across to North Korea as part of the peace offering or diplomacy mission, Cliff Robinson went with him. And I don't think many people realize that he was Dennis Rodman's right-hand man in the peace offering to North Korea. I don't know if you can still hear me or not, Eric.
I can.
Oh, you can? Okay. Well, we're done. I think we're done with the Blazers here. Remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter, Eric. Now, if anyone, Eric's voice is coming through very quiet on my end. I don't know if people can hear him, but I will repeat that. You can find his writing on RotoWire, and his Twitter handle is etcat30, and check out some of the stuff that is going to be coming up on RotoWire. And also check out the stuff that's on Hardwood Paroxysm. There's some great podcasts on there, some great articles. Our season preview is going to be out in a few weeks' time. And, of course, over on Basketball Monster. Leave a review for the podcast on iTunes and a ranking. It is super helpful in attracting sponsors for the show, and that does help the podcast gain popularity and gain a foothold in the marketplace, which is something that is really important to me. So thank you to everybody who's done that, and thank you to everybody who's planning on doing that in the near future. Eric, thanks for coming on the podcast. Apologies about the technical difficulties at the end.
Yeah, I've been doing this on my phone, you know, the last stage here, so that's probably the main reason, the sound is a little off.
No, you're back in full volume now, so all good. Just in time to sign off. Thanks for coming on. It's been good. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, Matt.
No, I don't have much of my day left. I'm about to head to bed after this.
Oh, yeah.
We're done here. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. See ya.